Hello, everyone. This is Bill Keneally speaking from the Hollywood studios of radio station KFMV. A few short days ago, the last tragic chapter in the story of Kathy Fiscus was written. Funeral services were held for the little girl who was entrapped for long, agonizing hours beneath the ground. The simple and beautiful burial service, in a way, marked the end of a truly heroic story. A story of individual bravery, of freely given services, and a story of a nation's prayers. Tonight, here in KFMV studios, are gathered a group of the men who aided in the Herculean efforts that went into the attempted rescue. These men, 23 in number, are members of the International Union of Operating Engineers. They are the men who did the vitally important work above ground at the top of the abandoned well shaft in San Marino. They are the men who operated the well-digging machinery that dug the rescue shaft. They are the men who operated the big clamshell shovels that are used to dig the major excavation that failed to reach the imprisoned infant. They are the men who, for long, agonizing hours, operated the crane that held the well casing in place around the new rescue shaft. And, in the last, final hour of tragedy, lifted Bill Yancey with Kathy in his arms up from out of the dark ground that had held her for more than 52 hours. Tonight, these men are being given special awards by the International Union of Operating Engineers in recognition of their freely given services in the rescue attempt. Also honored tonight are four companies who donated the use of their equipment to the operation. The awards tonight are made in the name of the president of the International Union, William E. Maloney. Presenting the awards will be the district international representative of the union, Mr. J.C. Fitzgerald. Before we go ahead with the awards, I'd like to give you a picture of what actually occurred chronologically at the rescue site at San Marino. First, the contracting company of Atwood Purcell arrived on the scene with a clamshell shovel and started sinking a hole alongside the well in which Kathy was entombed. It was soon joined by another clamshell from the Pacific Crane and Rigging Company, and they worked together in the same hole, meshing their operations so that when one machine was digging, the other was dumping. The Atwood Purcell machine reached the end of its cable at 35 feet, and then another machine from the Pacific Crane and Rigging joined the other piece of equipment from that same company, and they worked together in the same fashion, sinking the huge hole to a depth of 66 feet. Now, this is normally far beyond the range which a machine of that type ever digs. The operators could see only a few feet into the hole because it was so deep and narrow. And although the men were working blind, almost by feel, they were so skillful in their manipulation of the huge machines that the great buckets swung past each other time and time again without ever touching. Two bulldozers, one from J.E. Haddock and another from Atwood Purcell, worked together to move the piles of earth away from the side of the pit as the clamshells brought it up. After reaching the 66-foot depth, the digging bucket was removed from one of the cranes, and then the machine was used to hoist men in and out of the hole so that they could dig a tunnel from the pit over to the well that encased the little girl. When the tunnel was complete and a window was cut into the shaft, it was determined that the child was still too far beneath them to be reached. Meanwhile, the cesspool digging equipment belonging to the Gorham Cesspool Service had started another smaller hole only 30 inches in diameter. The machine was pushed to its limits in a frantic effort to deepen the hole, and it finally broke down at a depth of 35 feet. It was at this point that a heavy-duty caisson drilling equipment of the Bertram Drilling Company went into operation. This machine had been engaged in preparing foundations for the operating engineer's new union headquarters at 8th and Parkview when the call came from San Marino. The equipment, together with crews from the engineer's building project, were rushed to the scene and continued the final rescue shaft to its final depth of 91 feet. This was a depth that experts believed would be impossible to reach with caisson drilling equipment. The next operation was to install the casing in 20 feet lengths and weld them together so that they could enclose the entire hole. Because it was impossible to rest the casing on the soft quicksand at the bottom of the rescue shaft, it was necessary for one of the cranes to hold the huge length of pipe off the bottom throughout the entire rescue operation. Meanwhile, another line off the same crane lowered the men and tools into the hole and brought out the buckets of muck that the heroic men below ground were digging out by hand. It was at the 91-foot level that another tunnel was forced through to Kathy's well, and the steel that surrounded her punctured. Water gushed into the rescue shaft, forcing the men to temporarily abandon the hole while the casing was lifted up another 8 feet where another tunnel was started. This was the point at which the aperture was finally made through which Kathy's body was removed. Nick Phillips of the Pacific Crane Company was the man who hoisted Bill Yancey and Kathy out of the well. He had operated the giant crane throughout most of the ordeal with very little rest, and during much of this time, he was holding the casing above the heads of the men who were working at the 90-foot level. Their lives depended upon his skill and steel nerves, for simultaneously he was running another line on his machine that was hoisting the men and tools into and out of the well. For hour upon hour, he held his foot upon the brake that kept the casing from dropping, and the slightest slip might have let the great steel pipe drop and cut the rescue workers at the bottom of the hole in two. Enough of the description of what actually went on at San Marino. We now hear a reading of the testimonial to the 23 workers.
A testimonial. For service above and beyond the call of duty, for heroic and selfless devotion to humanity, and for upholding the highest traditions and responsibilities of the International Union of Operating Engineers, this award is a token of appreciation and sincere admiration for a valiant contribution toward the superhuman effort to save the life of little Kathy Fiscus at San Marino, California, on the tragic days of April 8th, 9th, and 10th, 1949. Signed, the International Union of Operating Engineers, William E. Maloney, General President, J.C. Fitzgerald, International Representative.
Now to make the presentation of the awards, we will hear from the District International Representative of the Union, Mr. J.C. Fitzgerald.
It is my privilege, in behalf of William E. Maloney, General President of the International Union of Operating Engineers, and due to President Maloney's inability to be here, to make presentations of scrolls and emblems to the members of our organization and the contracting employers whom did the work. I will now call the names of the various individuals that participated in the rescue work. R.J. Kirschman, Lester Day, Bert Morgan, Charles Douglas, Forrest Day, Alan Gilmore, Nick Phillips, Charles C. Carter, Dominic D. Limo, Archie C. Hill, Mike L. Foreman, Jr., Robert L. Booth, Herman W. Jones, Phil D. Tech, Ed Elliott, Carl McMaster, Vernon S. Crabb, Paul Hansen, J. L. Ombe, V. E. Milton, Leroy D. Grosspuck, Lloyd E. Lawrenson, B. A. Gordonham. The men will be presented with the scrolls and medals presented by our General President.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've just heard a broadcast of the ceremonies attendant to the presentation of awards and scrolls to 23 men of the International Union of Operating Engineers and to four of the contracting firms who contributed their equipment to the rescue attempt at San Marino of Kathy Fiscus. This has been a special event broadcast of radio station KFMV, the FM voice of Southern California.
Los Angeles needs a new mayor. The vote of the people yesterday indicates that 55% of them want to change anyway. From here out, I will conduct a campaign based upon the real needs of our city, the same as I have in the past. My campaign will be most vigorous. I do not believe in dealing in personalities. Principally for the reason that under our democratic form of government, free people, such as we are, have equal rights. And most certainly anyone has a right to run for any office. I like to deal with the main issues that confront our citizens. I am quite familiar with the things that need to be done for this city, and I'm quite sure that if given the opportunity, I can carry out the many things that we need and do it constructively, economically, and most certainly to the satisfaction of all of our people. This has been quite an experience for me, it being the first time that I ever run for office, but I'm quite sure that if the people understand thoroughly that what I am trying to do is to make this a greater and a much better city, they will support me all the way through. Thank you very much.